Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on after last week's fiasco, where we didn't get to talk about anything, really. Exactly. August 16th is today's date. Yeah. This may happen again today, by the way.
You never know.
Yeah, well.
You know what the problem is? The problem is it's the summertime. Kids are off from school. And with cable, even though I have a pretty high-speed internet connection, it seems that at nighttime, as you get later in the evening, I guess everyone is video chatting. So you get this bad connection, but I don't know.
They might be downloading. I don't know about video chatting.
What are they downloading?
Movies.
Oh, yeah.
Or they're running Netflix.
Right.
That'll chew up a lot more bandwidth than video chatting.
Right. Exactly. Lots of amazing things going on this week. I mean, since we talked last time, which was on a Tuesday, and I think I said something to the effect of, wow, this has been a crazy market the last few days and some of the craziest things I've seen, right?
Yeah.
I think we continue that discussion. No change to that.
Right.
No change at all. Amazing how the S&P was only down 2% last week and the Dow or so was down 1.7 or so at the end of the week. It was this major churning that went on up and down, up and down. Just incredible amount of movement. I mean, the ranges were just extraordinary. I think it was 2,500 points on the Dow Jones traded through the week.
It's ludicrous.
Yeah.
So how did you do?
We actually came out a little bit ahead. We cut out most positions the week before, and prior to that, we have different strategies. But one of the things we did was we actually kept a very high level of bonds in our global allocations, and we cut back on Europe, and we cut back on anything stock related. So we came out of the week, I mean, just scratched with that. And in our trading accounts, we actually came out up a little bit.
So what is a trading account? You say somebody gives you like $1 million.
Yeah.
Say, I want you to invest this. And what do you say to them? Well, you know, we got this, we got that. You sound like mutual fund ideas. Well, we got a little income thing here. You can pick up like, $5,000, a week or something. I mean, what do you say to people? What is somebody going to an investment management company like yourself? What is it exactly?
I mean, traditionally, I guess what you have happen, in investment companies is they talk about your risk and what kind of level of risk you want to have. What are we talking about? Can you deal with big ranges of variation in your portfolio value? Do you want income? Do you want tax free? I mean, what are you looking for?
A mutual fund strategy.
Right, one mutual fund. So what we do is we utilize in our global allocations, which we have a much higher minimum and we customize that a bit more. We use institutional mutual funds, ETFs, bonds, and a variety of other things to give a more of a traditional feel to the portfolio, but we don't just sit on it and wait for things to happen to us. We'll move in and out depending on market conditions, economics. And then our trading account, that's the one where we actually, we'll buy individual stocks, we'll go heavily short, we'll use options, we'll use leveraged ETFs, things of that nature to hedge out. And that one, we'll do silver, we'll do, all those
right,
kind
you
of
do
things.
All this stuff. Okay, now let's back up another notch.
Yeah.
Which of these, first of all, how many types are there? Are there three, four, five, what?
That we have, we have the global allocations, which we have three or four different risk levels, and then we have one trading account.
Okay, so which of the group, what does the best?
It depends on the circumstances.
Well, let's say over the last year.
Last year, I think last year, I would probably say more of the traditional global allocations because we had so much in bonds in that, very little in stocks.
Oh, so you're saying that the most conservative thing did the best?
Yeah, if you think about it, over the last year or so, that's probably I would say that.
Well, then if I'm like one of your customers, why don't I just throw the money in that?
Well, that's the last year. What about next year? You can't look. Everybody looks at past performance in a mutual fund. That's good to look at. Yeah, so or past performance of a investment, but that doesn't mean that the investment's going to in the future do as well. I mean, look at the investments that did the best in 2000 through 2007. They were the worst investments in the next 3 years. So you can't just look at it that way. You have to look at a kind of a bigger picture.
So what you're saying is, for a customer,
Yeah.
Like I said, let's say I got $5 million. You're saying it's like a crapshoot. So you're actually making the customer decide. You're the expert.
No. We talk to them about what their risk levels are. We talk to them about all this stuff. And basically what we do is from there we figure out what is the most appropriate allocation, you know?
Is this done in the same way that, let's say, a psychiatrist would talk about somebody during a marriage counseling thing?
Yeah.
You know, like you two, you know, need to do this and you need to do that. So you get the psychology of the person, what they can actually deal with. Because I can't imagine some of these guys, you know, they always want to go with the best thing, what happened right. The last year, but they haven't got the mentality. Or a trading account, let's say. Or somebody wants a really good shake the dice a lot. You know, they're slightly speculative. They don't care. Right. They lose all their money. They say, just make more. There's that type of personality, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have that, but also if people are looking to hedge out a little bit more, they want something different than just a, you know, they don't want to be market related necessarily. We have a bit of the strategy doesn't necessarily say, if the market goes up, we go up. If it goes down, we go down. It's uncorrelated. But the thing is that, you know, that's where the talent comes in, I think, of figuring out what is most appropriate for somebody. So we split it up in different strategies. We don't just put it in one. We may put in a couple different strategies for somebody. And then this way we can have a very well-diversified portfolio. And depending on how old they are, what the risk level is, I mean, that is, we're boring the hell out of people here.
I don't think so. And I'll tell you why. Because I think people wonder, you know, they always hear about, you know, these different guys who do this money management thing and what are their theories. And is it like a mutual fund? But it's actually not because it's more customized. And it tends to be like it's – analogy to this, which is like – instead of – this is like going to a restaurant and not picking from the menu. Just talking to the chef. The guy knows you. The chef knows you. And he says, I'm going to make you a meal.
Right, exactly.
And that's a lot different than going to just your stockbroker and saying, hey, I want to buy the Seligman Communications Fund.
Right. Well, the difference is also that instead of where you go to a stockbroker or some of these major financial planning shops, if you will, you know, you'll tell them what you want. You may direct them. They don't really do much besides set it up, you know, versus what you said. The chef, not only will he customize something for you, but maybe when the seasonal vegetables come into play, you're going to get those and that kind of meal suggested. Or maybe not. We just invest for people. They don't tell us what to do or we don't ask them. After we set up what the parameters are, we just run with it and kind of autopilot.
Right, so which is what a chef does exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, but at different times of the year, different situations. You know, we don't just kind of keep on serving. You know, you like meat, so you keep on getting meat all the time. Well, when maybe a particular vegetable comes into play or a particular meat or a fish becomes seasonal, well, that may be on the menu for you, and that may be something you get rather than just the same thing over and over.
Okay, well, you're right. I don't want to bore people stiff, although I'm convinced people are interested in this.
Yeah,
here's this one. So you go into the restaurant, and the chef is going to make this whatever.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing you know, the stuff comes out, and like, for example, my wife, she can eat Maine lobster on the East Coast, but anything that's on the West Coast, including Maine lobster that's been kept out here, she'll get sick as a dog, literally.
Yeah.
And so the meal comes out, it's got langostino in it, and my wife says, my God, I can't eat langostino.
Right.
And so the chef takes it back, and he makes up for it and comes up with something out, and it's like a pain in the ass for the chef. Is there an anomalous situation an analogous situation where, you know, the guy says, holy crap, you're investing in a company that is raping the earth. I don't see how I don't want to have anything to do with that company kind of
right.
thing.
Well, it's not, I can give you a different one because I explained to our clients that, you know, in the end of the day, what we're trying to do is make money and forget about all the morals and the ethics and all that. You can't really get involved in that. Because you don't know, you know, you're not giving money necessarily to the company itself when you're buying their stock, when a bond is different. But there may be some people that have some things that they can't buy. They may be consultants, and they can't buy certain stocks because they're restricted. So we put those on a restricted list, and anytime that does come into play, we just don't buy that. It's automatic. It's set up in their account that it's restricted, and it's a do not buy situation.
Ah. All right.
But if somebody says to me, you know, hey, you know, I don't like that you bought Microsoft because, you know, whatever, I'm an Apple guy. You know, that's possible, right? Yeah, it could very well happen. Yeah. You know, we'll say, well, that's not an acceptable restriction, you know?
Right.
So that doesn't happen that often. I don't think it's ever happened.
Okay. Anyway, I don't want to distract from the basic show, but I think every once in a while I wonder about this stuff myself.
I hear you.
And it's a funny business. You're in a weird business. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very singular thing. There's not that many people that do – well, actually, there's quite a few people that do it, but very few of them are public.
Right.
Are public figures like yourself that actually talk about it. And I think it's something of a black art and kind of magic to a lot of people, and I think they should know about this because one of these days, there's probably somebody listening to the show right now, even though most of the people already have a lot of money from what I can tell. But there's probably some guy that's thinking about it, hits the home run with some crazy thing he does in the tech business and he's worth or an athlete. These guys get ripped off left and right, and they don't have a clue about money managers.
Right. Well, the athletes, I can tell you stories about athletes getting ripped off. It's sad, but that's another time.
Yeah, we'll save that for later. We'll make it a pay for a disc and then charge athletes.
That's a good idea. And as long as their managers get a cut, that's how it works.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the big story of the week. The big story of besides the markets in Europe, blah, we got all that to talk about.
Right, I wrote about this yesterday in PC Magazine.
Google is buying phone maker Motorola. Mobility Holdings, which is the split off of MSI, Motorola Solutions, and Motorola Mobility. And they're buying it for $12.5 billion in cash. They have a lot of money in cash.
Nice little bump.
And yeah, so I think it was a 65% premium to the closing price. And it seems that one of two things are happening. Either just a general stock market swoon and Google's not doing as well, or the shareholders of Google are not thrilled about this purchase. What do you think?
Well, it's funny because a friend of mine who writes for the Register in the UK, Andrew Orlowski, he took a very negative tact. He said it was ridiculous, and he thought that the new CEO, not Sergey, but his pal, made a huge blunder. They're buying a bunch of old patents that are useless because they went out and said that it's going to be for the patents. I took a completely different tact. I said this was genius on the part of Google. They need the patent portfolio because, and even though these are maybe old patents, they're all definitely mobile phone patents, A. And they need, and these patents can be looked at with fresh eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are engineering, people with an engineering mentality, which is not you and me, they have a certain way of seeing things, and they can find money in these patents, lots of them. Lots of patents and lots of money, and they need something. They need blocking patents. They need trading patents. They need a lot of stuff because they're getting screwed right now. Right, apparently Microsoft alone is getting $5 a handset from the people making handsets for the Android phones, and who knows what Apple's doing? But Apple likes to sue at the drop of a hat. Now Google will have the majority of mobile phone patents, and now they can charge it the other way and maybe even gouge. Who knows? All I know is they needed this. They needed something, or they were going to be done. Android was going to be through. It was going to be finished. It may be desperation, but I think it's a positive thing. And I think the shareholders, they're selling off on this. It looks like a buying opportunity somewhere down the road.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, first of all, it seemed like a pretty significant premium. Now, there's a lot of places that have been talking about it that this is a dot-com price in a time that is not justified.
Except
the second thing.
Well, wait, before you go on, I want to mention this is also a hardware deal, and .com analysis doesn't work for me. But go on.
Okay, I think the idea was maybe not just .com, but we're talking about the premium was significantly higher than the value. The second thing was, there's a question about is Google now going to, manufacture their own hardware, and if so, which clearly can be the case, if so. What does that do to the other suppliers, and how is that going to affect sales of other Android suppliers? And they're going to be in competition with others, like they were doing with the failed Nexus One.
Well, there's a couple of ways of looking at it. One is, they are going to be in competition at some point. Right now, they can probably still, first of all, you've got to look at the Android operating system. It's free. Mm-hmm. So these guys, except for there's certain kinds of service contracts involved that where Google makes money, but generally speaking, you have a choice. It's a very interesting situation because Google can start making their own handsets through Motorola as opposed to just throwing out this Android thing to everybody and making very little money. And so they're competing. The rule about channel conflict, which is what it's called in the high-tech business, is it's always verboten. It's a bad thing. You should never do it. Apple, by the way, has made a career out of doing this. Mm-hmm. They've screwed over channels constantly, and they set up their own stores now. I mean, and in competition with what used to be the channel. And the way I see it, this is just similar to what Apple's been doing. It's been extremely successful. There's no reason to think that Google can't eventually just make its own phones and with the Android on it, and then also let the Android operating system go into the wild for other people that want to use it if they want to or not. If they don't want to, they can switch over to Microsoft and pay a heavy premium because you have to pay a fee. You know, you have to pay a licensing fee. They're not going to get the Apple OS. That iOS is never going to go into the public sphere. And the Symbian is dead. So you have, here's your choice. Free Android, make phones, do what you want, or pay Microsoft money for something nobody's buying. I don't see it the problem, personally. I don't see how Google loses.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, the stock is not saying that. That's all I'm saying.
No, the stock, well, it's because it's not fully understood. And we have a lot of, negative Nellies out there that are seeing this as well. What you just said, they paid too much and this and that. Yeah, they probably did pay too much. But in the scheme of things, in a bigger market, if the market was hot and rocking and we're at, 18,000 Dow, this would have been a steal.
Yeah. I hear you. I'm with you. So we'll see what happens. I mean, the Google, I put a chart up actually that shows that it has a bit of a head and shoulders pattern, which is not always the best thing to look at, but it's a head and shoulders pattern that formed once before. And if you look at where the price extension and the target would be on that, if it does break down, is probably another $80.
Yeah.
We'll see. Maybe then it'll be even a better buy.
I think so. I think Google has been sitting around. It's not, I wouldn't say dead money because it keeps going up and down and up and down. But I think if Google gets down to back down to 450 or something, it's got to be a steal.
Yep, I hear you. So Warren Buffett is making a big hoo-ha and calling for two things. Number one, great time to buy stocks. He was saying that he was in buying that hand over fist on that really bad day last week. He thought stocks are on sale. So that gives you a little indication of why the stock market propped up a bit there, how it was held, because obviously some of these big players were in there. But he's also calling for more taxes on the mega rich.
Yeah, big talker. I got more
money.
That's the point. and the problem is Democrats have a tendency to consider mega rich, people making a couple $100,000 a year. We've had, for one thing, we have to always remember that the tax rates have not changed that much. They've actually increased a little bit. But there's been bracket creep for the last, 40 years since the 70s, where people are making this, they have the same buying power, but now their income, instead of being $30,000 a year, is, 95,000 a year, but they don't really have any more buying power. But now their taxes are higher because they're in a higher bracket because of bracket creep. This has been going on and continuing, and it's never been addressed. I'm not buying any of this more taxing thing until they straighten out the system. They have to go to a flat tax.
Well, this is the whole point of even the slightest amount of inflation. And today we saw actually the import prices up, 14% year over year. And that's clearly a condition that is going to cause excessive pricing increase or some pricing increases. And we're seeing that in restaurants. Have you seen the price of food lately? Have you noticed?
Yeah, it's out of control.
Out of control.
And what's weird in San Francisco, you go eat at a restaurant, which I don't even like to do. I try to eat out of the city now, because you look at your bill and you've got, besides a fixed 18% tip, which they always expect you to add more to it, which is the problem. In Europe, it's not a problem, because in Europe, you go to a French restaurant, you're in France in the middle of nowhere, and you get your bill and you pay it. It's whatever it says you pay. There's no extra, there's no tip, there's no guilt thing, because the tip is built in, everyone's happy, because that's the way the French are. Here we have the tip that's built in, and then they expect more because there's still a line there. There shouldn't be a line. It says gratuity. But wait a minute. It's already built in. And then they have these health code taxes that they've added to the bill, which is a percentage of the bill. You have to pay another $6 or $7 for some bogus, I don't know what they're even doing with this money. Just a scam that goes to the city. It's an extra tax. And it's out of control.
Well, it's about to get worse. In Los Angeles and in California, there was a huge differential between the amount that collected in taxes and the amount that was required for the budget by about $500 million in July. And then Los Angeles is now calling for gigantic changes in Prop 13. And they're looking to actually increase the property taxes, and particularly for commercial property, and they want to increase it by about $8 billion a year. Talk about just, you know, getting the last of the companies out of there, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, people are bailing out. California's in trouble because the businesses are being driven out by these greedy government workers who are making $400,000 and $500,000 a year for desk jobs. It's absolutely astonishing. And then they're worried. I mean, the Prop 13 was put in for a reason, which is some years and years ago, which, you know, fixed the property taxes. It made them stick. And so they had to scrounge around for other forms of money because they used to just gouge everybody on property taxes. And I don't know what they're going to do. They, if these guys weren't high-paid government workers that are scamming the public and then not doing any real work, there wouldn't be a problem. But unfortunately, there's the basic corruption here. Nobody can correct it. They can't fix it. I don't know.
I don't totally agree that, you know, with all these, you're making a big generalization there that.
No, I'm not.
Okay. But you are making a generalization. Whether you're right or wrong is a different discussion. You're making a generalization that the people in the public works arena in California pretty much don't do anything. I mean, what are you talking about? Managerial? Where do you make the cutoff there?
I think, generally speaking, most of them.
God, you're bad.
I used to work in the public sector. And I know what, right. I mean, I'm not like without some, you know, inside information about this. And a lot of the work is just bull crap.
All right. Well, speaking about nobody working, let's talk about Europe for a second. Europe, it seems that the leaders can't make up their minds lately. You know, they go back and forth between they're going to do euro bonds, which is a consolidated bond offering for the entire region. Germany says no way. Then they say, well, maybe we will. Germans are pissed off that they have to come up with all sorts of money. And, you know, be paying for these bailouts. European banks are just in just horrible. But there was this big meeting today, and then and a big announcement at 12 o'clock today. And Merkel and Sarkozy made a announcement. They said this is France and Germany, and they downplayed the whole idea of these euro bonds. Saying, I think they're leaving that to, you know, God forbid they have to do it, they'll do it.
One of the reasons, of course, is especially Merkel. They'd rather have people investing in German Deutsche bonds, you know, kind of thing, rather than euro bonds.
Yeah, sure. Well, because if you invest in euro bonds, the money's essentially going to the worse-off countries.
Yeah, the
laggards. Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a real super socialist mentality if they do something like that. You know, they're trying to bring together the whole region and make everybody equal, which has been the downfall of the euro from the beginning. You can't have these unequal countries and economies and having the inability to basically measure and then to adjust on their own. You know, you can't do that with the euro. You need to have that, and that's just not going to happen. And then they're going to get even worse. Now you're going to have these euro bonds. You're going to have a centralized European agency, if you will. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand where they're going. First of all, I don't understand how they believe that this is going to make anybody happy. And second of all, I don't understand where they come up with these cockamamie ideas. The one that really was astonishing, was that they're thinking about, they've been talking about, the idea of proposing a financial transaction tax on any transaction that's done in the financial markets. I mean, how absolutely miserably stupid is that? You know, you talk about you want to shore up the confidence of investors and you want to make sure that there's some, you know, a level of stability inside of the region. And the bottom line is that what you're doing is you are, the bottom line is that you are, it's just the whole thing's a mess.
Well, the thing that would be funny about it, I think you're right. I mean, the thing is a joke. But the high frequency traders, I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, are they going to have to pay for all the, you know, when you like a million transactions, like in two tenths of a second? You have to pay like a nickel on each one. I mean, you go broke with that whole process.
They won't do it. No, they won't do the transactions.
Right. So and the whole system will collapse because it's been kind of, you know, it evolved over the years to what it is today. And you can't make a major change like that. I mean, you just the high frequency is in the model now.
Right. Exactly.
You pull the plug on it, and it's God knows what's going to happen.
It's aside from just the high frequency, though, you have also, you know, investors who will move in and out of the market in various instruments to hedge, large and small investors. You know, you have mutual funds, you have managers, you have the whole thing is ludicrous.
What about the fact would this particular edict, would this apply if like you were trading in the New York, you just move all your trades to New York or Toronto instead of trading in the Bourse or the DAX or the CAC or whatever those things are?
Probably not. I mean, I would assume not.
So people just bail out on the European exchanges.
That's what I'm saying. The same thing is true about...
What is wrong with these people?
I have no idea. The same thing about what they just did with the ban on short selling of certain financial instrument, financial companies.
Crazy. Crazy.
Because there's a lot of stocks that are traded on the other boards. So if you want to short them, go short them on the other boards. It's just nuts. The whole thing, honestly, they have their head so far up their tuchuses that it's ridiculous. They need lessons in finance because they have gotten themselves in such a tizzy and so backwards that they're not understanding. And you know, the biggest thing they did that was, I thought, astonishing to begin with was raise rates recently. The ECB raised rates a few months ago. I'm thinking, what is wrong with these players? I mean, they're raising rates because they see a touch of inflation hitting. And I'm not suggesting that they should do, you know, the extent of what Bernanke's done. But the whole thing is ludicrous. And then we saw Germany's GDP today come out today horrible, 0.1.
Yeah, it's about time. This is what I think is one of the reasons I think why the whole thing's going to fall apart, because people that do have some sense about how it works, like the Germans, are going to just they won't be able to put up with it much longer. I mean, these crazy guys in Belgium, which is where all this really stems from. That, you know, the EU Parliament and all the different committees and congresses that they have, they come up with these ideas because they're lost. I mean, they're just a bunch of aristocrats from the EU who have never actually worked for a living, and they've never worked.
Well, back to that again, huh?
Another good example.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, well, there's problems there. I got to tell you something. That doesn't mean that you could see a dramatic, you know, increase on, you know, 2 days on the bank stocks there because everybody decides they're a buy at these levels, or, you know, all of a sudden things do well in the European area. But I got to tell you something. The economies are slowing down dramatically because of the rate increase. The fact that the euro is, you know, still maintaining a relatively high value compared to where it should be because they keep
ridiculous.
On pumping money in.
I was watching that after this, like, week of turmoil, and the euro starts dropping, gets to, I think, $1.40, and then that pops right back to $1.45, $1.44.
So it's really quite astonishing.
It's ridiculous. And then the yen is another one. What is wrong with these guys? They can't deal. I mean, the Japanese are just so screwed. Of course, the Japanese understand it. They know they're screwed. They can't. Yeah. I mean, if the yen is selling at 75 cents, the Toyota car is now, like, you know, what, 30% higher than it should be, 25 to 40% higher. I mean, they come over here, so they have to cut the price on the cars to keep them competitive. So they got no profits. I agree.
And not only that, Japan just came out with their GDP 2 nights ago, and it was a negative 1.3. So everybody was all excited because it wasn't the negative 2.6 they thought it would be. But this is the third consecutive quarter of negative GDP prints. And if you think about it, everybody said, well, it's because of the tsunami and the earthquake.
That's bull crap.
It was three quarters, meaning it was before that.
Oh, funny. No, right? It's a total bull crap. And the fact of the matter is these guys, it doesn't bother me because if I could buy the Toyota at the same price I would have bought it 5 years ago, relatively speaking, because they can't jack it up based on the exchange rate. So they're taking a bath on each car they sell me. I mean, who's winning in this game? I mean, it makes, again, the U.S., you know, seems to have the best strategy.
Right, which is basically screw everybody else.
Yeah, and it works fine. And but they're letting themselves be screwed. It's not as though we're, you know, doing any dirty dealing here. We just as soon have the dollar a little more even, I think.
Well, I mean, we're open about it. You know, we say we're going to be devaluing. Well, we don't call it devaluing. We say, you know, we're going to be doing these things. It devalues the dollar. Everybody knows it, but they can't do anything about it. You know, the Japanese and the Swiss. So the Japanese yen and Swiss currency is
the franc.
The franc is getting so so highly valued.
Well, the Franc guys, by the way,
they're freaking out.
I always thought the Swiss franc was undervalued like a few years ago. It was definitely was going to happen because the Swiss know what's going on and they have a very solid economy and they managed to. But they don't like this offset because they know it's a problem and they're doing everything they can to not let it continue.
Well, you know, one of the things they're doing is, you know, a cup of coffee and a toast or something is like $8.70 now in Switzerland because of the wacko exchange rate. And what they're doing is they're so panicked that they're just going to crush their economy that they did a gigantic intervention recently, dropped the Swiss franc down about 4% for a day and a half, and then it went right back up.
Now they're talking
about pegging it to the euro. Talk about desperation. That's desperation.
Wow. I didn't hear that. That's funny.
Oh, yeah. They're talking about pegging it to the – and everybody's like, what? Now, that's crazy.
And the yen,
Noda is constantly talking about that. You know, he's watching the market. He's watching the markets. You know how a parent says to a kid, if you do that again, wait a minute. I'm going to count one, two, three. And by three, they're supposed to drop what they're doing, the kid, right?
Yeah.
And the parent goes, I'm going to count to three. One, two, three, four, five. I'm like, what are you doing? You know, that's what Noda, he's saying, I'm watching the markets, and if we see any further deterioration here and the rise of the yen, we're going to do, they don't do anything. So now everybody's thinking, all right, we'll just keep on going along and buying the yen until they do something.
Well, I think in the long run, it's going to make, I think it's helping the U.S. I think long term we'll benefit from, I don't think the economy is going to get much better, but at least we won't be killing ourselves like these other guys are doing.
Yeah, well, that would be, can you imagine if the dollar was really high right now? I mean, that would be
would be awful to a point, but then again, you can go to take a trip to France, have some fun in Europe. I mean, it's too expensive right now.
Go to Vietnam. I'm telling you, the cheapest place.
Vietnam is a fantastic place, and it's educational, and
yep.
You get great art there, and you can bring some stuff back because you can bring art back duty free. And yeah, I say Vietnam is the place to go. And
yep.
And you're right. And meals are cheap, and the hotels are good and cheap, except for all the beggars on the street.
A few of them here and there. You know, you got to be careful. You got to know who to take a picture of and who not to, because they come right after you. I have an idea. This housing situation, we know it's a problem. We know that the housing situation is not getting any better.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a problem if the banks actually lended the money.
If they lent the money, but if we also had the ability to stabilize the prices of housing, which keep on dropping. Because of oversupply and these foreclosure mess and all this. So I started thinking about this. I said, what is it that has been moving up and what caused it? And I noticed that used car prices have gone up dramatically on a year-over-year basis, which you wouldn't think that would be the case necessarily. So there's a chart there that I gave you. If you look at that, see where it says idea? See this?
No, I'm looking. Hold on.
So I looked at the dates of the Japanese earthquake because one of the problems right now is the Honda dealers and a lot of the car companies that have parts or manufacturing in Japan have a significant amount of inventory problem right now. And what's happened is that the Honda dealers are just screaming that they have no inventory and this whole problem. They can't do anything about it. On the other hand, Hyundai has no problem because they have no manufacturing of parts from Japan. So when you look at what happened here is that since the Japanese tsunami and earthquake, which happened in the early part of March, March 9th, the prices of used cars on a year-over-year basis has gone up dramatically. You see that chart?
Yeah, no, it's gone up. I don't know if dramatic is the right word.
Well, I mean,
what the scale is on the right.
This is percent. This percent year over year.
So it went up. Oh, well, yeah, it's gone up like 6%.
I mean, that's a lot for used cars.
Yeah, it should be going down. They're used cars.
Right. So used cars have gone up by 6%, and that's significant.
No wonder we can't get that. We're trying to get a used caravan. One of our cars is a caravan. We have kids, and we drive dogs, and we need a caravan. So we have a Dodge Caravan. And we've stayed with – we have one, I think, now is the last one we have, which has got like 200,000, 250. The things are amazing cars. But we're trying to get a 2007, which is the last of the Dodge Caravans that have the old frame with the with the parts that are cheaper and the dealers that know how to fix them. Since the 2008 up, they've changed the car completely, and nobody likes this car. The new car is crap. So the price of the 2007s has not changed for almost 2 years. We keep tracking it. Why isn't it dropped? You know, it's amazing.
Well, I mean, I think this is the thing. Now, if you transport this conversation and turn it into the discussion of housing, it would seem to me that if someone would use their noodle and put a moratorium on new housing and stop building for a while, it would force people into existing housing.
Well, I think in California, they've stopped building on their own.
Well, maybe, but they're still building. Not much. I mean, if you look at the numbers today, it was, I think, 600,000 year over year.
Yeah, no, if they put a moratorium on new building, they actually made an edict.
Yeah.
I think that would trigger a house because, oh, my God, what are we going to do as opposed to letting the thing just languish?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you need to do something very significant there. So, I don't know. We'll see. But it is interesting, I think, that supply-demand concept has kicked in pretty well with the used cars. So, anyway, and then the other thing is, you know, just getting back to Europe for a second, the discussion has been focused around Greece and Italy and Portugal, all these different countries. The real question I was starting to think about this, is it really those countries that the big problem right now, or is it possibly France? Because France is really in line for a potential downgrade here. If you look at their debt to GDP and you look at their deficits and their numbers, and if you look at what happens if France is actually downgraded, because they hold their banks in particular hold a tremendous sum of Greek debt. They're the ones that have to maintain a certain status in order to fund the bailout funds and all that. So I think that we need to be watching France for a while here. Hmm. Just as a side note.
What's the investment angle?
Well, the investment angle is, you know, you watch France. If France gets downgraded, the entire region gets big trouble, big bad trouble. You know, you go maybe short the European region itself, or you go short the preferreds out of there. You definitely go short the banks out of France, bonds in that area. You go short the euro. I mean, it goes on and on. Hmm. It's definitely short.
Yeah, everything would be short. But what would be the best short is kind of the question.
I mean, for the average person, you want to go. You can get a double whammy. You can go and do EPV, which is the short European shares, and that gives you the European market as well as shorting the euro. It's a two-timer too, so it gives you a lot of action.
So it's EPV.
Yeah.
Take a look at that. This ultra short European MSCI Europe.
Yeah, it's the Morgan Stanley Capital International. It's just an index.
As high as 80, and it dropped way down to 40. It's like this thing cycles, and it went up to 65. Now it's back down to 50. Yeah. That's an interesting. Yeah,
this will be a play on the European stock market essentially, and the euro. Because let me give you an example. If the European stock market of this index does zero, it doesn't move up or down for the day, but the euro moves down 1%, you'll make 2% on this fund, approximately.
I like this one.
Yeah.
I might throw this one on the list. I think we're pretty bare.
Yeah, we got a couple more things to stop out. Did you see Dell? What happened after hours today?
No.
It was not fun to watch. Dell has it came in with a decent EPS number and in line on revenue, but they're trimming or cutting down is a better way to look at it. Their year annual guidance, if you will. They say that their third quarter revenue is going to be roughly flat on a sequential basis, which they thought it was going to be about a 3.5% increase. That was what the analysts thought. And it's lowered its full year revenue outlook to between 1% to 5%, which is a gigantic range. Stock was down about 7 or 8% after hours.
Yeah.
Sure, someone will come in with some discussion of why this is such a good thing. Don't forget, they also bought a cloud computing company, plus other companies, but cloud computing recently.
Right, that cloud company.
And why is that not providing any kind of bump?
Yeah, it's overrated.
Maybe, but they obviously didn't do what it was supposed to do. I mean, Dell is just look. I don't know. You know, Dell is. I don't think it's an acquisition target. It's you know, their sales have been flat for a few years. You know, their competition obviously is eating at every part of them at this point. They tried the phone. They tried the
They got no tablet. Phone. They got no tablet. They got. They bought. You know, that crazy Alienware, whoever it was, hot
right.
computer maker that made the jazzy computers. that all the kids wanted.
Those are expensive. Those are expensive.
Well, they were high end because they were gamers' computers, and you would sell just very few of them to people that are fanatics that used to be LAN parties more than there are today, I think. And they, you know, just absorbed that. They didn't use any of the. I don't know. I think it's a dull company, unfortunately. I did a column called, you know, Dull Computers.
Yeah, I was saying, you change one letter and you got it.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know.
All right, so let's kind of keep this going and probably, make it as much as we can in here.
Probably do.
Baidu, you know Baidu.
Yeah, they got the Chinese.
Boy, they're getting slammed. This is the second time a similar, if not exact, story has come to play there. The China Central Television has accused them of letting fraudulent pharmaceutical companies get around advertising requirements. This has been a big issue. You know, this happened also in the United States, and there had to be a shutdown because every time you open up a web page, you get these, you know, pharmaceuticals that you can get and without prescriptions and all this stuff.
Right.
But now the accusation was an attack by the state broadcaster against them. And last time this occurred, the stock was about down, I think, 20%. This time the stock's down about 10% already in the last three days. So that's something to think. That's BIDU.
Yes. Well, it's got a long way to go.
Yeah. This has a very similar chart pattern of a potential breakdown. If you look at some of the technicals and the classic technicals on this, I mean, you could see an easy 10% down from here.
I could see the thing selling for $70 personally, but.
Which, by the way, is still at 10 times where, I mean, it's $70. It split 10 for one recently. Well, last year or so. So it's still 700.
Wow.
Yeah.
This stock is doomed.
Well, I mean, you look at the real players in this market, you know, between Sina and Sohu and Baidu. You also have Google over there. Forget about Yahoo. You know, I mean, it's definitely with these kind of situation, who knows what, you know, between all the things that are going on in China and all that, I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, it will move very rapidly, and the earnings are great. The company is solid, but these kind of accusations really don't bode well in, you know, for Chinese or anything these days, actually.
Should have picked some of the stock up in January of 06
at
$5 a share, sitting around 140. Yeah. What were we thinking?
I don't know. You know, it can't happen.
Sounds like a buy and hold.
Oh, this is a good stock. This is a very good stock.
Yeah.
Very good stock. You know, there will be a price that will be a buy again. Mm. What do you think about the Iowa straw poll?
Either that or it'll collapse. Well, let's see. I think Ron Paul actually won it. Well, I mean, Michelle Bachmann bought all her votes. And Ron Paul, hey, nobody wants to talk about Ron Paul, of course. Never mind. I shouldn't even bring it up.
Hold it. But hold on. Back up. Let's just back up and dissect this. Ron Paul won. All right, let's put that aside for 1 second. Because Michelle Bachmann bought her votes.
Yeah.
Can you give me a little explanation of that,
well,
please?
Well, to vote for in the straw poll, which is kind of a joke anyway, but to vote, you have to pay, like, I think $20 or $30. I think it's $30. You have to pay $30. It goes into the pot, and then I think it goes to charity or something like that. And then you get to go in and vote. And Michelle Bachmann, I believe, according to at least some reports, bought 6,000. But they all buy votes. I don't think Ron Paul may too, but I don't know that he did because he's got a bunch of fanatics that followed him all, you know, from all over Iowa that came in to vote for him. But she bought like 6,000 votes. For $30,000, it cost her $180,000 from her funds. She's got lots of money from her, you know, campaign funds.
There was a total of what, 12,000 votes that were cast?
Yeah, something like that. But she got 4,500 votes. She paid for 6,000 votes. I guess a bunch of people just took the money and voted for Ron Paul.
Nice. Gotta love that.
Whatever. Because, you know, it's apparently still a secret ballot, so you can't, you know, walk the person in. And as far as I'm concerned, Ron Paul won. And, of course, he's downplayed in all the news stories. It was a great. People out there should check out the Jon Stewart, Ron Paul clip from yesterday. It's on Comedy Central. It's all over the place where he just eviscerates the media. They don't even want to talk about Ron Paul. Everybody
is a little weird. It's odd.
Well, it's not only weird, but it seems as though it's almost government-inspired because if you remember sometime about a year and a half ago or sometimes after the 2008 elections, It was the Department of Homeland Security went out and said, hey, if people have a Ron Paul bumper sticker, they could be terrorists. They could be terrible people. They could be, you know, the problem for the government and all the rest of it. And they literally said Ron Paul. And he's bitched about this a number of times, that our own government is putting people on the watch list who seem to be supporting Ron Paul. And so it's almost as though the media conspires with the government, who conspires with everybody. You know, I mean, the Fox News won't talk about him. Rush Limbaugh talks about him reluctantly. Mostly says, I listened to him this morning, he was bitching about people always wanting to talk about Ron Paul, and he doesn't have a chance to win, and he doesn't like him because he's, you know, a libertarian and not a Republican, even though it says a big R on his name. He's in Republican, you know, committees. I mean, who's he kidding? So, and then Sean Hannity goes on and on about how Ron Paul, he doesn't, you know, he's a nice enough guy, but he's not strong enough on national security. In other words, you know, there's somebody who's going to lose. But this just seems to be this overall, I hate to say it's a conspiracy, but everybody wants to marginalize this guy out of great fear that he could actually get enough traction to get the nomination.
Well, the whole big thing is that this guy wants to audit the Fed. He wants to open the doors of
can't
Fort Knox.
Can't have that.
Right, can't have that. He wants to open the doors of Fort Knox see if there's really gold there.
Maybe no gold. We can't do that.
Right, and he wants to go back to the gold standard.
Well, he wants to go back to the – yeah, but not, you know, a lot of people want to do a lot of different things. That's not going to happen. Let's face reality. But he does want to get us out of the wars. He thinks it's a big waste of money. He wants to drop the war on drugs, which he thinks is a big waste of money. He's very fiscally conservative, to say the least. And yeah, he does want to go back to the gold standard, but that's an idle threat. He can't do that. And there's a lot of other things he wants to do, but he doesn't.
Is that the same thing as Obama saying that he's going to get jobs back?
Yeah, he's going to get jobs back. Or Obama promising that the first thing he's going to do when he gets in office is close Gitmo. He can take that to the bank. Or first thing he's going to do is get out of the Iraq war, which is over. Right. And meanwhile, he starts another one. So, I mean, so these guys are full of crap, and Ron Paul is no different, but they seem to take his, you know, little nutty ideas, like the gold standard. Personally, I find it to be ridiculous. They take it so seriously that they're afraid to even talk about the guy. I think it's very telling. I don't like it.
Well, I think he's a guy that is not going to conform, and maybe that's the part he should be in, the nonconformists. And you know, he's a guy that is not going to conform. He's not, well, at least from his talk. We'll see how he walks, but he's not going to conform. He's going to hit the government right between the eyes. He's going to create all sorts of unrest and stir the pot and turn everything upside down. And nobody wants to deal with that, so they'd rather just keep it quiet than talk about it.
Yeah, they want to keep it quiet. They're afraid of him. They were actually scared shitless about this guy. Now the funny thing is, he is now the head. As a Republican, not a Libertarian, he's got the R next to his name, no matter what Rush Limbaugh wants to say. He is the head of the House Finance Committee that has the oversight of the Fed, and he's talked about it. He hasn't been able to do anything. I mean, he can only do what they can agree upon and force the Congress to do. I mean, he's not a crazy guy. He's not like railing every time they – I've seen the meetings. He's not railing about this and that. He's asked – pertinent questions. He makes a few comments, and it goes around the horn like it does on all these other committees. He's not nuts. You know, they always like to paint him as the crazy uncle that we all have in the woodshed. And the problem is, I don't think he's as presentable as he looks a little, you know, dog faced.
He's a little shaggy.
He doesn't dress up like he should be wearing, you know, jazzier suits instead of these shirts that he wears. And so I don't think he's doing it right. But the fact of the matter is, he's getting attention. People should be paying some attention to him. It seems to me they shouldn't be just marginalizing the guy. I think it's corrupt.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you on that. And what this guy Perry out of Texas?
Ah, oh, let me ask you a question. Nightmare.
Let me ask you a question. Does this guy? There was a movie about George Bush, George W. Bush.
Yeah, exactly the same. Brolin.
Did he look like him?
Yeah, totally.
I looked at him, I'm like, this is not for real. This is not – this can't – when I kind of started looking at the picture, I said, who does he remind me of? He's from Texas. I said, oh, my gosh, it looks just like Josh Brolin.
Yeah, and he sounds a lot like George Bush. Yeah, and weird. He is a nutball. They like to write Ron Paul off as a nutball. This guy's a total nutball. He's giving sermons in mega churches of 30,000 listeners. He's going on crazy things that he wants to do about one thing or another. He's completely insane. He's been a Democrat all his life, and it's just ridiculous that this guy's even considered. But the Hannitys and the Limbaughs and all the right wing guys, they're all on his. They're all with him.
Well, meanwhile, tonight yesterday he called Bernanke's actions treasonous.
Yeah, yeah, that's how irresponsible he is.
Yeah, just unbelievable. Well, anyway, politics aside, lots of other things to talk about. Some good, some bad.
The portfolio.
We can talk about that in a second. We have a few minutes, I think. University of Michigan came out last Friday. Their preliminary confidence number for next month. It was supposed to come in at 62. Last one was 63. It came out at 54, which frankly was shocking. If you want to find a 54 in the past, you have to go back three decades.
Really?
Three decades. We're not talking about the lows from 2008. We're not talking about the lows from like 2001, 2002. We're talking about the 80s. The 80s. That is unbelievable. Now, meanwhile, on that number, there was also a retail sales number that came in at a plus 0.5, which was a fourth month of retail sales that was good. And everybody on Monday was all excited about the fact that we had good retail sales. And I said, wait a minute, retail sales are a look back at the numbers. Consumer confidence is a look forward to what consumers are going to do, or at least potentially. They don't always do that, but it's a forward-looking indicator. But yet we take the one indicator, retail sales, and we say, oh, that's great, but yet don't we realize what's going to happen with the 54 number? People are really going to clamp down again.
Yeah, no, I think so. Mm. Everybody's depressed.
Yep. All right, let's a couple of things here. We talk about this. Skull Candy, the IPO came out, went down 7%, bad earnings tonight. IPO recently, Dunkin' Donuts missed estimates. Right after they came out with their IPO, they also missed estimates. That was kind of interesting, I thought, that these guys are coming out. J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs lowered their outlook for the U.S. 2%. At best for the year. Here's where the problem lies with this. The estimates that were being used for GDP and growth and all the estimates that were being used for our budget and deficit reduction were somewhere about 4%. So S&P comes in and does some numbers, and they come up with this number. And now the White House and everybody's screaming and up in arms. Oh, they made a $2 trillion mistake. They're not assuming this. You know, I think that it was some of the growth issues that they looked at and said, you know, it can go either way. But if you don't have growth, your numbers are way off, and we don't see that growth happening.
I don't either.
That's crazy.
There's no crazy, growth crazy. Model for growth.
Nope, none at all. All right, you want to go to the portfolio?
Yeah, might as well.
We almost had the kinks out. We were
almost
able to
clear it out, the whole portfolio.
Yeah. Nice, huh?
Yeah, we up and down, a little high VIX, and the next thing you know, no portfolio.
Yeah, well, you got that volatility that comes in. It whacks you around a bit. One of the things
I just want to start with this. I have to say that one of my interesting picks is on here, which is a short for Netflix.
Yeah.
Which seems to have weathered the storm and is making money against all predictions.
I must say, you are honestly the only person in the world that has successfully made money on a short of Netflix.
There you go.
I mean, I've never heard a good story about shorting Netflix. Never. So there you go.
Timing.
Wonderful job. JCPenney is a short also, dual picked up 23%. Your IBM is hanging in there. I think the stop on IBM is 168. I think that's the number. So you're doing fine there. It's not doing much on the downside. But we did get stopped out of a few positions. This is interesting, actually. The long bond that went parabolic on the way up didn't seem to stop. After the downgrade, you would think that there would be a little bit of a pause and people would maybe be stepping back from buying the U.S. Treasuries. Not only did that not happen.
This is one of your picks that I actually laughed.
Not only did it not happen,
I laughed at this one after with what happened. It was like
unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it's really funny.
And the second thing, not only did not happen, but the second thing that happened was China was even upping their ante after all their mouthing off about this. We looked at the tick data. Well, that was 2 months ago, I guess, the tick data, or a month. It's a month old, so it doesn't consider this last period when they would have actually seen the downgrade. But their tick data was up in Treasury buys, if you will. But the tick data overall was down significantly last month. So there wasn't a lot of foreign buyers of Treasuries. But the TBD, actually, we had the ultra short. Look, we had the ultra short Europe on here already.
Oh.
We made 14.5% and stopped out.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with this. Didn't you do... Wait. What happened to your... Maybe we stopped this out last week. What happened to your negative bet on the emerging markets?
Oh.
Where is that?
I don't know. I think...
Did that get stopped out? Let me look at the page.
It must have been stopped out because I saw it on the chart a couple before.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. You're up 15% and it got stopped out. Yep.
Oh.
Yep. I'm looking at the stop page.
It's funny you think that would be hanging in there. Well, Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix. That's the world winner. I love that. So I'm reluctant to put any. We're in a clear downtrend or at least a very volatile area right now, and I'm very reluctant to pick up stocks. As a matter of fact,
what about some shorts? We need some more shorts on this list.
We could. I think you could. You know, your EPV can go on again. I think that there's plenty of stocks that you could pick from. Google is you like it, but that's a potential Baidu. You have there's a lot of the high flyers in the computer area that could be problematic. Any of the like an Nvidia, possibly, with the Dell number that just came out. Banks. You know, banks go either way, but man, they're looking pretty awful.
Yeah, look awful, but they go up and down so much. I think the stock, especially with the prices that they're at, they're going to get stopped out so quickly,
yep,
one way or the
yep
other. With one day of up and down, we're through. Well, I'd like to put the EPV back on,
okay,
and I can't think of anything else. That the emerging market one I still like. I might want to put that back on.
That's on. We just put it on. It's officially on now.
And two ETFs. I can't think of any companies that I have enough guts.
I mean, there's some. It was also
short.
The preferred.
I mean, how's General Motors doing? How did I get knocked off of that thing? I thought that thing was falling through the floor.
Yeah, General Motors got stopped out finally of a 15% gain or something like that. So that was good. Because again, they go up and down. I mean,
yeah,
when
you have that high VIX, it's just like you can't do what we're doing and expect to live for more than a week.
Not to mention the fact we only do this on a Wednesday morning open.
Right.
So
it's very restricted.
Very restricted. It's like your investment strategy? Well, we buy certain things and short certain things only on Wednesday mornings.
Right.
You know?
There's no versatility. But you know, occasionally you get something that's kind of – I mean, I think the JCPenney thing is a huge winner.
I find that amazing how people got sucked in to the new CEO not thinking anything after that. You know, that was right when we did it, right when the CEO –
on the day.
Yep. So that was a nice
Both
spike
of us
on that.
Felt the same way about it, which is funny.
Yep. There's also, I mean, the preferred stocks. If you look at things like there's some ING preferred stock, Royal Bank of Scotland. I mean, the preferred stocks that are out of Europe are still problematic. Some of the insurance companies out of Europe, some of the insurance companies here, like an Aflac that has a gigantic portfolio of preferred stocks from Europe, could be a very good short. They also do most of their business in. Japan, a lot of their business, if not a majority of their business, comes out of Japan. So
you sent me an email during the week suggesting some screwy stock that might be shortable.
I said one of the things that will happen is, yeah, that like a SocGen, Societe Generale, that it's traded on the U.S. exchange. And if the foreign exchange don't allow for shorting, you can still short some of these on the U.S. exchanges. And that one was traded on the pink sheet. So there's a whole list of things that are traded here, you know, that are foreign stocks that are traded here. And why not to short them here? I don't know how they're getting around what they're doing, you know, and they think they're going to win at this game by stopping the shorts. And if you look at the history, it doesn't help.
No, it's never helped. It's bull crap.
It's the whole thing
about stopping short selling. It unevens the market. I'm in total agreement with all your theories about this, which is it actually normalizes the market. It actually makes things better.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing is bizarro. I'll put Aflac on here as short.
Aflac?
Exactly. I'll have to put that on. I'll look at that a little bit more. This is just kind of off the
cuff. You're
going to
short it?
Yeah.
Huh.
I'll have to look at it a little bit further. That isn't a fully researched idea. The one I am putting on is Spreadtrum Communications. This stock actually was hit by the shorts some time ago. It went down, I mean, a dramatic amount in one day and popped right back up because what they were saying was untrue. And this is one of those Carson Block deals, like Muddy Waters. And what happened is that they were making some kind of assertions about something from years ago that they weren't provable. The stock went down dramatically and popped right back up. They make the parts for mobile smartphones, some of the antenna arrays and a few other things. Hmm. And there's been a lot of talk about how this Google deal could be very good for them. Hmm. So I like the stock. It rates very highly in a very bad market condition. It's been up the last couple of days. It was up today on a bad tape. It was up the last few days on a bad tape. So, well, you and got it's more, at a point right now of a breakout.
Yeah, you got more guts than I do. I wouldn't be buying anything.
Yeah, only one stock here. Market's been a little bit resilient. It's been bouncing off. I will tell you, though, if we break through some of these lower numbers here, we got a problem. There's a big, big hole in the market.
Yeah, what's the biggest one?
I mean, in terms of the market, if we break through, on the Russell, if we get through 690. 690, another 10 points or so, it's going to be a little ugly. Definitely, that's a small cap index. It gets a little ugly. We've been trading that short and actually long from bounces, but we'll go back into a short if we get anywhere near that level. It could fall another quickly 10%.
So what are we looking at? You have an S&P chart here, which shows a lot of information.
Oh, what happened today, I think, right? Which one?
Well, you're talking about the 10-10 support being a problem area. I'm listening to a guy on one of the CNBCW, which I really like, because there are a bunch of, you know, Europeans, and they have their own take on everything. It's much of it alien. And this one guy says the buying opportunity, really, if the market really falls all over the place, is when the S&P hits 950. He says everything gets cheap.
Yeah, well, 950 gets really cheap, but that's also another Fibonacci level. If you look at this, it's very close, 930 I have. And if you can probably get that, this is a weekly, so you could probably get that a little closer to about a 950 level. I would tend to agree with that. That becomes very, very cheap on the S&P. You know, there's a lot of support there, by the way. You look at those two spikes, the 943, the 956, and then there's a good volume across there. And then you got right next to a Fibonacci level. So there's definitely
the 10-10, which is the one that looks like it's pretty solid.
Yeah, the 10-10 is there's a couple of different things going on there. You have a lot of support there, bouncing off of there. You have two different Fibonacci levels that are they converge. There's a confluence of both of them at about the 10-10 level. Now, that's where the magnet will be under 1,100. If it gets down there.
So if it goes under 1,100, it will likely bounce off a 10-10.
Yep. There's a lot of bouncing ability there. Yep.
And then if it didn't, like there's all hell broke loose someplace, let's say, and the thing failed, then 950 would be the next fallback. And then from there, it's just a disaster.
Yeah, you get down to an 870. You get that 850, something like that. And then you get ugly. I mean, I don't know that gigantic move down from about 850 down to 660 was just a total panic capitulation, blow it all out. Hedge funds had to just give out everything because of margin calls. I mean, you were at a whole different level there. So I think if you really can cut the chart off at about 850, that's what you're looking at.
Yeah,
I think it's more reasonable.
Yeah, it seems unlikely it's going to drop to 666.
That would be the
mark of the devil.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Well, I don't know if that helped anybody. But
I don't know, but we got through a whole show, hopefully, without me cracking up.
About what?
Well, I mean, my voice in the...
Oh, yeah. You're holding up very well. And the connection actually works, even though it's not as good as... You should just move to the other place.
Yeah, move to the lake house. That's because nobody's in there with the internet for miles.
Yeah, makes a big difference.
I probably have the pure pipe right from the provider.
Yeah, you might. All right. Well, let's talk again next Tuesday. I think it's a go.
And, okay. And hopefully,
you expecting up and down the same thing, or the VIX going to go up, change? Are we going to?
I'll tell you, I'd be very surprised if we see a big upward move unless something unbelievably dramatic happens. But we're past most of the earnings season. Earnings are very mixed, if not, you know, towards the negative side, with outlook being negative. economics, we have a lot coming out this week. We have some more initial claims. It's a big week of economics, which have been very mixed. We have leading indicators at the end of the week. I can't imagine them being a decent number. They could beat expectations, but I can't imagine that because most of the numbers are built in already. I'd venture to say that if that's all that Europe can give right now is that statement that they made, that not many people are going to be very happy about it. It's not going to be extraordinarily like, oh, everything's better now. No way.
I can't, a lot more volume. Yeah, I can't see it either. All right, we'll talk again on Tuesday.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.